This Morning, America's First News, starts right after this.
As a business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This Morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Trump tweaks Tehran. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. It is Friday, October 6th. Glad you're with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
President Trump is reportedly expected to refuse to certify that Iran is in compliance with a controversial nuclear agreement from 2015. We'll explain the different scenarios.
In the wake of the Las Vegas shooting, the National Rifle Association made a surprise announcement that it's willing to consider regulating a certain gun accessory.
The city of New Orleans has declared a state of emergency ahead of Tropical Storm Nate. Some residents have been told to get to higher ground.
And the downward spiral for hotel rewards programs.
Things are getting worse, and we've certainly seen this for a long time with airlines. It's been building with hotels. Some of the numbers were pretty shocking. We went back and looked at compared buying power from what we saw 2 years ago, and a couple of the programs had weakened by about 20%.
Wall Street Journal travel columnist Scott McCartney on the best and worst rewards programs. He's here in about 20 minutes. President Trump is expected to refuse to certify that Tehran is complying with the Iran nuclear deal of 2 years ago. Reports say it's part of a broader policy change on Iran to be set out as early as next week. That move would place key decisions about the future of the nuclear deal before Congress, which could move to reinstate sanctions. However, Congress may choose not to, as such a step could lead to the collapse of the agreement. The president, meanwhile, met with military leaders last night.
We must put an end to Iran's continued aggression and nuclear ambitions. They have not lived up to the spirit of their agreement, and we will be discussing that tonight.
If Congress doesn't take any action, the Wall Street Journal says the White House may simply accuse Iran of non-compliance and leave the deal in place. Mr. Trump, as you'll recall, has referred to the accord as the worst deal ever. Many of Mr. Trump's cabinet advisors, including Secretary of State Rex Tillerson and Defense Secretary Jim Mattis, support staying with the deal. The National Rifle Association is indicating it's ready to restrict an accessory known as a bump stock, something used by the gunman in Las Vegas to strafe a crowd with bursts of sustained fire, as if from an automatic weapon. The U.S. gun lobby, a powerful force in Washington politics, rarely embraces new firearms control measures. Here's NRA Chairman Wayne LaPierre.
What the NRA has said is we ought to take a look at that, see if it's in compliance with federal law, and it's worthy of additional regulation. That being said, we didn't say ban, we didn't say confiscate.
He was on Fox News. Police say the gunman equipped 12 of his weapons with so-called bump stock devices that allow semi-automatic rifles to operate as if they were fully automatic machine guns, which are otherwise outlawed in the U.S. Authorities said his ability to fire hundreds of rounds per minute over the course of 10 minutes from his hotel room perch was a major factor in the high casualty count of 58 people killed and hundreds wounded. Republicans are feeling antsy, apparently, over a key provision in their tax plan that could put some of the party's most vulnerable members in the House in deeper jeopardy. The GOP tax plan would raise $1.3 trillion over the next decade by eliminating a deduction for state and local taxes. That could hit people hard in high tax states such as New York, New Jersey, and California. More from Scott Wong, reporter at The Hill, who covers House Republicans. Scott, what do we have here?
Well, this is proven to be a difficult issue for many, as you mentioned, swing state Republicans, vulnerable Republicans on Capitol Hill who have tough elections coming up in 2018. This issue is a key part of the GOP tax framework that was released last week by the White House and by GOP congressional leaders. We refer to it as SALT. It's the state and local tax deduction. The GOP plan wants to completely eliminate SALT, the SALT deduction. And what this deduction does is it allows people in high-taxing states like New York and New Jersey, Illinois and California to deduct their state and local taxes. And so what that means is constituents in these congressional districts, some of them represented by these vulnerable Republicans, would end up paying higher taxes. And so that's a real concern for many of these lawmakers, Republicans specifically, with tough elections come next fall.
How many of these Republicans are there?
Well, the Tax Policy Center, which is a independent think tank, identified 20 House districts where taxpayers use the SALT deduction the most. And out of those 20, eight of them, so almost half of them, were seats that were represented by Republicans who are top Democratic targets in 2018. Let me go through a couple of those names. You know, Lee Zeldin from New York, Rodney Frelinghuysen, the appropriations chairman who has a very tough race from New Jersey, another New Jersey guy, Leonard Lance, who I spoke to just this week. Leonard Lance said, look, I'm not going to support the GOP tax plan, and I'm a Republican because of this SALT deduction issue. Mm-hmm. If they don't fix it, I'm a no vote.
What are the other options? Has somebody like Mr. Lance floated something else?
Well, there are discussions. Obviously, House leadership and the White House don't want to lose a big chunk of these moderate Republicans, vulnerable Republicans that are crucial to preserving their majority next year. So there are discussions. The Ways and Means Chairman Kevin Brady held a dinner with some of these vulnerable folks earlier this week, and they tossed ideas back and forth on how we can come to some sort of middle ground on the SALT deduction issue. What we're hearing now is that maybe there's some area for you know, them to meet in the middle by limiting the SALT deduction rather than doing away with it completely. So these are talks that are currently underway, negotiations that are underway, but I guess the good news is that people are still talking and that people are not, you know, backing into their corners.
Mm. We're speaking with Scott Wong, senior staff writer at The Hill. He covers House Republicans, and he's written a piece entitled Swing Seat Republicans Squirm Over GOP Tax Plan. So the SALT issue here, the state and local taxes, is that the biggest current hurdle to tax reform?
I would say yes. Surprisingly, the tax reform plan has a much smoother path to passage than the health care bill did earlier this year. With the health care bill, the Obamacare repeal bill, there was opposition on both ends of the Republican conference. There was opposition from the Freedom Caucus that thought the bill did not fully repeal Obamacare, and there was opposition from moderates in the Tuesday group who felt like it would just take away too much funding from their states. And so very quickly when this tax reform bill was revealed last week, the House Freedom Caucus, including the chairman, Mark Meadows, endorsed it very, very strongly, and that was a surprise.
Scott Wong, reporter at The Hill. He covers House Republicans. It's 15 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Glad you're with us. Welcome into Friday. The mayor of New Orleans has declared a state of emergency for the city ahead of Tropical Storm Nate. Mayor Mitch Landrieu said residents who live outside the city's levee system or in low-lying areas should move to higher ground. Evacuations were ordered yesterday for parts of Louisiana, including St. Bernard Parish, east of New Orleans. In Florida, the Western Panhandle was facing a potential threat as it's just outside the eastern edge of Nate's three-day forecast. Here's Governor Rick Scott.
The storm has the potential to become a hurricane and impact the Florida Panhandle this weekend, and families must be ready.
A direct impact to South Florida is not expected, but the area will likely see some more rain this weekend as Nate churns up through the Gulf. Nate has already been blamed for 22 deaths in Nicaragua and Costa Rica. Back in New Orleans, officials were outlining how they intend to fortify that city's pump and drainage system after flash floods this summer exposed weaknesses in that system. It's 20 minutes after the hour. On This Morning, Jennifer Kashenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, the NRA has joined the Trump administration and top congressional Republicans in a surprising embrace of a restriction on guns, though a narrow one, to regulate the bump stock devices the Las Vegas shooter apparently used to horrifically lethal effect. White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders was asked whether the president supports the ban.
We're certainly open to that moving forward, but we want to be part of that conversation as it takes place in the coming days and weeks.
The devices allow a weapon to fire continuously between 400 and 800 rounds in a single minute. Las Vegas gunman Stephen Paddock booked rooms over other music festivals in the months before opening fire on a country music festival. Investigators reconstructing Paddock's movements say he booked rooms overlooking the Lollapalooza Festival in Chicago in August and the Life is Beautiful show near the Vegas Strip in late September. Fenway Park in Boston has also come up during the investigation. Hackers working for the Russian government stole details of how the U.S. penetrates foreign computer networks and defends against cyber attacks after an NSA contractor removed the highly classified material and put it on his home computer. The Wall Street Journal reports that the hackers appear to have targeted the contractor after identifying the files through his use of a popular antivirus software made by Russia-based Kaspersky Lab. The theft, which hasn't been disclosed, is considered to be one of the most significant security breaches in recent years. For decades, Harvey Weinstein has held a lofty position in Hollywood as one of the industry's most powerful figures, an old-school, larger-than-life movie producer who was never shy about throwing his weight around. But Weinstein's name, a regular refrain on countless Oscar nights, is now ringing out in a different way. In a bombshell expose, the New York Times reports that Weinstein had reached at least 8 legal settlements with women over alleged harassment. Major League batting champion Jose Altuve launched 3 home runs as the Astros roughed up Chris Sale and the Red Sox, winning Game 1 of their AL Division Series last night 8-2. In the other AL matchup, the Indians blanked the Yankees 4-0.
Man, that's how you rely on your stars.
5'6".
Is that right?
Yeah.
I did not realize that. Wow. A lot of power there. 23 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Glad you're with us. Your airline miles buy less and less. Now hotel points appear headed in the same direction. A new study shows significant declines in buying power at some major hotel programs, with the number of points needed to book rooms rising even as the dollar cost of a room drops. What's going on? It's a story from Wall Street Journal travel columnist Scott McCartney. Scott, are things getting worse?
Yeah, I think things are getting worse. And we've certainly seen this for a long time with airlines. It's been building with hotels. Some of the numbers were pretty shocking. We went back and looked at compared buying power from what we saw 2 years ago, and a couple of the programs had weakened by about 20%. So it's the hotels say they're offering more perks besides free rooms, and so that's increased the value of the programs. But if you're in a hotel program and all you want are free rooms, it's getting harder and harder to get what you want.
So Wyndham at the top of your list, and it seems like by a long shot. Explain the list a little bit.
Yeah, Wyndham is really interesting. Wyndham's historically a chain of budget and sort of mid-tier hotels. They do have some fancy resorts, particularly in the Caribbean. They do have a lot of nice Wyndham hotels in major urban areas. And they decided to invest a lot of money. They're putting $100 million into their loyalty program and really pumping up the benefits to try and lure more business travelers. Those frequent travelers that we were talking about earlier, what they've done is create a flat rate for redeeming any room in the chain. So 15,000 points gets you any room. Well, not such a great deal at a budget hotel, but a great deal at a Caribbean resort or the New Yorker in Manhattan or any one of a number of really nice Wyndham properties in major cities.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal travel columnist Scott McCartney. His piece is called The Best and Worst Hotels for Cashing in Rewards Points. All right, so who else near the top or maybe the worst of the programs here?
Yeah, I think Marriott's worth noting. The payback was calculated at about 9%, and that was pretty good. Hilton was around a little bit less than 8%. At the bottom, it's very interesting, is Starwood, and this has been consistent for a couple of years in this survey. Starwood's actually owned now by Marriott, and they're merging the two programs. But Starwood has different incentives in the program. They're the company that started the ambassadors for the 100-night a year people. They have a lot of very nice Westin, St. Regis, all kinds of high-end hotels, along with Sheraton's and some budget brands. But they really gear the program for the elite members and put the money into that. The payback of everyday earning and burning of points was only 5%. And that's down from where it was a year ago.
Hey, Scott, Wall Street Journal travel columnist Scott McCartney. 30 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. When a state ranks among the top 10 in the country for major new and expanded facilities, that's pure growth. When it's tops for three straight years, that's pure Michigan. Long known as a world leader in the automotive industry, Michigan is also a leader in defense, cybersecurity, mobility, agribusiness, and aerospace. In fact, CNBC rates Michigan among the top 10 states in the country for business. To learn more, visit michiganbusiness.org. Small business never stops moving, so Dell's U.S.-based small business technology advisors are trained to keep up. Just call 877-BUY-DELL to get connected with an advisor who will get to know your business and tailor a solution with Dell PCs powered by Intel Core processors that is right for you, so you can focus on your business and leave the tech questions to Dell. Call 877-BUY-DELL to get in touch with a tech advisor today.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome to Friday, October 6. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Trump may not certify Iran's compliance with the nuclear deal. The NRA is open to regulating bump stocks. Tropical Storm Nate pushes New Orleans to declare a state of emergency ahead of time. Toys R Us recalling 30,000 Wiggle Balls for a choking hazard. Louisville Courier-Journal says Rick Pitino received 98% of the cash Louisville was to receive in a shoe deal with Adidas, equivalent to $1.5 million a year. S&P 500 posts its first eight-day win since 2013. Patriots beat the Buccaneers, and how hard it is to get a job as a dog walker. That story in about 20 minutes. The Labor Department releases the September jobs report today. It's surely going to reflect people out of work from a small handful of natural disasters. Here's a preview from Mark Hamrick, senior economic analyst at Bankrate.com. Mark, your expectations.
Well, first of all, we believe the underlying trend of the U.S. economy remains generally quite positive, but this September employment report is going to inject a bit of noise, I think, into the discussion, because we have to acknowledge that the impact of recent hurricanes and flooding will infuse some of this data and confuse the rest of us to some degree. So that means that, for example, among the most important numbers we watch, payrolls, the number of jobs added, we've been averaging about 175,000 jobs a month so far this year. Wouldn't be surprising if we get 100,000 short of that in this report, but that's not because the economy is rolled over. It's because a lot of people had to hunker down and a lot of economic activity was essentially suspended or delayed or didn't occur. So we'll look at that and we'll say, okay, that was 1 month, and what we sort of had to give up in those months and perhaps in the third quarter, we'll get some of that back as we close out the year, meaning the recovery and rebuilding effort will actually help us.
Okay, so in October, when you and I perhaps will talk in a month, are we going to be talking about still some lingering impacts from the hurricanes and flooding?
Oh, sure. There will be lingering impacts for months, if not years, from combination of all these storms, okay. But it will not be enough to sort of knock the U.S. economy off track. That's not to be dismissive about the impacts on individuals, businesses, communities. We know that was The word catastrophic was used repeatedly, but it's not a catastrophe for the U.S. economy. That's a lesson we've learned from past events like Superstorm Sandy as well as Katrina. The impacts of, at least two of these hurricanes seem to be perhaps taken together, even more significant than Katrina was. But the good news is we're already seeing it in some cases. We're coming back. So car sales last month were really strong, and that was because people had cash in hand to replace the vehicles that were flooded or destroyed, for example, in the Houston area.
We're speaking with Mark Hamrick, senior economic analyst at Bankrate.com. So the potential here for lower job growth, would that be tied also to lower economic growth because of that?
It looks like the U.S. economy may have taken a bit of a pause in the most recent third quarter, but the outlook for the foreseeable future is pretty good. Not everything is firing, so to speak. Not all the cylinders are where we would like them to be. Retail sales have been a little on the weak side. Consumer spending, obviously feeding into that, a little weak. Home sales nationally, a little weak. But overall, for example, we're seeing both the goods-producing sector, which includes manufacturing and construction, and the service sector, which is really the broadest part of the U.S. economy, those seem to be doing broadly quite well. And so, this is what we see over time. The economy is never, quote-unquote, normal at any given time.
Okay.
It's a little bit of give and take. And, this is a mature economic recovery at this point, so that it's doing this well at this point is a good thing.
Interest rate hike still on track for December, best you can tell.
Yeah, it's still widely expected that the Fed will likely raise interest rates at the end of the year. The conundrum, the mystery for our central bankers and really for anybody who's paying attention closely to all this is, why is inflation as low as it is? That's the problem in a way for the Fed, because as inflation remains low, it sort of takes away one of their arguments for boosting interest rates as aggressively as they would like to do. So there's still a possibility we don't get a rate hike at the end of the year, but I think that's the default expectation at this point.
So generally speaking, then, when all these factors are considered, whether it's a low inflation or maybe a blip in growth of the economy or lower jobs numbers for September, possibly October and more, what does that mean for the kind of the average everyday guy?
Well, certainly, on the one hand, we've seen the stock market continue to move to record high levels. That won't continue forever, but we just don't know when it's going to stop. But as we talk about the likelihood that the Fed will be raising interest rates, and we don't think that they're going to stop raising rates anytime soon, we need to think about, number one, the risk that borrowing rates, interest rates that are charged on things like credit cards, home equity lines of credit, personal loans, will go higher. We need to think about the fact that eventually savers will get a better return on their savings, and that may even feed into areas like Social Security payments in 2018.
Thanks, Mark. Mark Hamrick, senior economic analyst at Bankrate.com. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Hey, reminder, by the way, we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter with the username at This Morning Show. You can follow me directly on Twitter, too, with the username at Gordon Deal. We do have a lot of fun there, exchanging notes. By the way, you need to like cynicism and sarcasm. Thanks for being with us. If the microphone was on just 10 seconds earlier, you would have heard Mike Gavin doing his Billy Joel right there. Man, I wish I had seen that
coming.
Yeah,
it's too bad everybody missed it.
I would have told Dave to flip that on.
Man.
Folks really would have gotten a chance to see what kind of musical range you have.
Well, I guess they'll never hear that again, huh?
Beyond the headlines now. This morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, 'tis the season for pumpkin spice, and whether you love or hate the trend that has taken over everything from coffee to pizza to Pop-Tarts, one thing we can all agree on is that this product may have taken the trend a little too far. This after a high school in Baltimore was evacuated yesterday afternoon over an odd smell that prompted fire and hazmat officials to arrive on campus. The source? A pumpkin spice air freshener. At around 2:30 p.m., students noticed a strange odor on the third floor, according to the website for the Cristo Rey Jesuit High School. The school's president said that it was a smell that the students weren't used to, and it appeared to be getting stronger. Students were evacuated shortly after the Baltimore Fire Department's hazmat team entered the building. Several students and staff were evaluated by EMTs, and five were taken to the hospital as a precaution, the school said. More than 350 students are enrolled at the school, according to its website. Classes are expected to resume this morning.
What? I still haven't figured out why people were taken to the hospital.
Yeah. That I haven't figured out yet. That wasn't in the story, and I still haven't been able to get the answer to that.
What was the name of the school? Snowflake High School?
Oh boy, yeah.
What
they said? Look. The fire officials said that they did the right thing.
Okay.
They smelled something strange. They were alarmed by it. They let the professionals come in and handle it.
So I see.
The fire officials said, you know what? They did the right thing.
They know the difference between the smell of natural gas and pumpkin spice.
And it was at the end of the day, so they got to get out a little bit early, I guess.
Brother. Okay. Okay. Listen, they were there. I guess I'll back off on the judgment.
And speaking of fall foods, Gordon, don't think for a minute that the Los Angeles Dodgers are going to rest on their laurels and take anything for granted this postseason at the concession stand. The team has apparently added a whole host of new food options just in time for the team's first playoff game tonight against Arizona. The new calorie bombs were tweeted out by an ESPN reporter last night and then ranked by USA Today from craziest to least crazy. Among the least crazy, the Carnitas waffle fries. Carnitas fries are common in LA, so this one ranks as relatively tame. Moving up the crazy scale, the donut bacon double cheeseburger. It's not just one burger patty in a donut, but two patties.
Oh, of course.
Yes. Plus, blackberry jam mixed in with the maple syrup topping.
Jeez.
And number one on the crazy Dodger Stadium foods list, the ice cream chicken sandwich, a glazed onion grape jam filled donut with spicy crispy chicken, candied bacon, and vanilla ice cream.
My mouth is watering.
So it's like basically like a chicken sandwich, yeah, with a donut on top and like ice cream in the middle.
And then the kitchen and sink and refrigerator thrown,
yes,
in.
Yes, yes. And then me on the ground, you know, 10 minutes later.
Onion grape jam.
Yeah.
In the donut.
Yeah.
Onion grape jam.
I don't know who's putting that together. I got to meet them.
13 minutes now in front of the hour. Glad you're with us. Welcome into Friday. A new study from AAA finds that while new car infotainment systems occasionally promise reduced distraction, they don't really deliver on that. The AAA Foundation for Traffic Safety focused on three key points: finding the most demanding task, assessing the demand required for different methods of input, like voice commands and touchpads, and whether that demand varies between makes and models. Of 30 different vehicles tested, 23 of them created high or very high levels of demand for drivers across four different tests: making a call, sending a text, tuning the radio, and programming the navigation. Not surprisingly, no cars created what would be considered low demand. The study found that using the screen and physical switchgear was the least demanding of the bunch, followed by voice commands, followed by writing pads and dials on the center console. The study found navigation to be the most demanding task of the group, but texting was still quite demanding as well. It's 8 minutes now in front of the hour on this morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, Tropical Storm Nate is racing toward Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula after drenching Central America in rain, and it's being blamed for more than 20 deaths. Forecasters say it could reach the Gulf Coast as a hurricane over the weekend. Louisiana officials have declared a state of emergency and ordered some people to evacuate coastal areas and barrier islands ahead of its expected landfall early Sunday. New Orleans Mayor Mitch Landrieu.
Once again, we find ourselves in familiar territory threatened by another storm that's coming our way.
The National Hurricane Center says Nate could dump 15 to 20 inches of rain on Honduras. President Trump delivered a foreboding message last night, telling reporters as he posed for photos with his senior military leaders that this might be the calm before the storm. White House reporters were summoned suddenly and told the president had decided he wanted the media to document a dinner he was holding with the military leaders and their wives.
What storm, Mr. President?
You'll find out.
It was not immediately clear whether Trump was referring to one of a handful of thorny military or foreign policy areas, including North Korea or Iran's nuclear program. The former British spy who compiled a dossier of allegations about President Trump's ties to Russia has spoken to investigators from the special counsel. Christopher Steele met with special counsel Robert Mueller's team of investigators in recent weeks in Europe. The dossier contends that Russia collected compromising personal and financial allegations about Trump. Mueller's investigating potential coordination between the Trump campaign and Russia, and the meeting with Steele suggests investigators continue to take that dossier seriously. Well, if you've seen comedian Larry David's impersonation of Bernie Sanders, you could be forgiven if you thought the comedian and the former Democratic presidential hopeful were related. Turns out they are. They're distant cousins.
That is really funny. That is amazing.
That is amazing.
Yeah. All right. Cousin Bernie.
Cousin Bernie.
Yeah.
People say to me,
know, they talk about Larry David, and I say he does a better Bernie Sanders than I do.
The discovery was made by the PBS show Finding Your Roots.
Come on. Is that right?
They tested DNA and found this out, and then they brought them together to surprise them.
Wow. Well, I guess nobody is surprised by that. Thanks, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Glad you're with us. In many American cities, landing a job as a dog walker is tougher than earning entrance to an elite university. Rover, which is a pet care app based in Seattle with more than 120,000 walkers, accepts only 15% of applicants. Another one called WAG, which serves nearly 300 American cities, has an acceptance rate of 5%. By one measure, there's no better time to be a dog walker. U.S. pet ownership is at an all-time high. The uptick has buoyed the dog walking industry, which has seen its annual revenue grow nearly 4% the past 5 years to $1 billion. Canine Running Company, based in Brooklyn, New York, offers one-on-one runs, not walks, for its furry clients. Several dog walking services have live GPS tracking. WAG and Rover's walkers flag the location of potty breaks and even send post-walk photos. Getting hired isn't easy, but neither is navigating on-demand apps. They operate like Uber with dog walkers filling requests. Dog owners can request specific walkers, but usually the matches are random. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.